Jai Ram 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 Sara Satoshi Shiva. Evangelist Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada ki. Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Bharavirakacharya Sara Satoshi Shiva. Evangelist Sri Bhaktivedanta Sara Satoshi Swami Maharaj Prabhupada ki. Anam to Kota Vaishnavinda ki. Iskan Founder the Chayas Evangelist Sri Prabhupada ki. Namacharya Shila Hidvasta Korki. Hemsi Gahoshi Krishna Chitani Prabhupada Chananda Shri Dwiti Gadaha Shri Vasili Gaura Bhaktivinda ki. Shri Shri Hare Krishna Gopal Gopinath Shama Vrindavan Dham ki, Navadip Mayapur Dham ki, Ganga Mayi ki, Muna Mayi ki, Tulsi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Sankirtan Yajna ki, Harinam Sankirtan ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrindi ki, Gopriyamanandi ki, Glory Sita Samadhavati, speak from Bhagavad Gita, right? I don't have one. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from chapter 10, text 4 and 5. Buddhir Ganam Asamoha Kshama Satyam Dhamma Shama Sukam dukam bhavo bhavo Bhayam cha bhayam eva cha Ahimsa samata tushtish Tapo danam yaso yasha Bhavanti bhava bhutanam Mata eva vritag vidha Buddhir Gyanam Asamoha Kshama Satyam Dhamma Shama Sukam Dukam Bhavo Bhavo Bhayam Cha Bhayam Eva Cha Ahimsa Samata Tushtish Tapo Danam Yasho Yasha Bhavanti Bhava Bhutanam Mata Eva Pritag Vidha Buddhir Gyanam Asamoha Kshama Satyam Dhamma Shama Sukam Dukam Bhavo Bhavo Bhayam Cha Bhayam Eva Cha Ahimsa Samata Tushtish Tapo danam yasho yasha Bhavanti bhava bhutanam Mata eva pritag vidha
Intelligence,
jnanam,
knowledge, asamoha,
freedom from doubt,
kshama, forgiveness.
Satyam,
truthfulness.
Dhamma,
control of the senses.
Shama,
control of the mind. Sukham,
happiness.
Dukham,
distress.
Bhava,
birth.
Abhava,
death.
Bhayam,
fear.
Cha,
also.
Abhayam,
fearlessness.
Eva,
also.
Cha,
and.
Ahimsa,
non-violence.
Samatha,
equilibrium.
Tushti,
satisfaction.
Tapa,
penance.
Danam,
charity.
Yasha,
fame.
Ayasha,
infamy.
Bhavanti,
come about.
Bhava,
natures.
Bhutanam,
of living entities.
Mata,
from me.
Eva,
certainly.
Pritakvidha,
variously engaged.
Arranged.
Translation.
Intelligence,
knowledge,
freedom from doubt and
delusion,
forgiveness,
truthfulness,
control of the senses,
control
of the mind,
happiness
and distress,
birth, death,
fear,
fearlessness,
nonviolence,
equanimity,
satisfaction,
austerity,
charity,
fame and infamy,
all these
various qualities
of living beings
are created by me alone.
Before I'm going to begin reading the purport, I wanted to read some commentaries. One was from Surendranath to me, Bhurijan Prabhu, who did a summary study of the Bhagavad Gita. One of them is also from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and I'll explain why I'm speaking from this before. First, I'll read the first sentence of the purport. The different qualities of living entities, be they good or bad, are all created by Krishna, and they are described here. And from Surendran to me, it is said that Krishna is the source of everything, Srila Prabhupada writes, of whatever we find, good or bad, the origin is Krishna. Nothing can manifest itself in this material world which is not in Krishna. That is knowledge. Although we know that things are differently situated, we should realize that everything flows from Krishna. The qualities born of goodness are helpful in knowing Krishna and awarded to devotees by Krishna himself. Srila Prabhupada writes, and he's taking extracts from this purport, quote, all these qualities are manifest throughout the universe in human society and in the society of the demigods. Now, for one who wants to advance in Krishna consciousness, Krishna creates all these qualities, but the person who develops them himself from within, one who engages in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, develops all the good qualities as arranged by the Supreme Lord. End of quote. Yet despite the helpfulness of these qualities, because they are born of goodness, they cannot on their own reveal Krishna, who is beyond the mode of goodness. Nor can the great sages and demigods who are born of Krishna and are situated in goodness know Krishna through their own abilities. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains Krishna's words, quote, the knowers of Shastra cannot understand the truth about me by their own intelligence, because his intelligence is born of goodness and the other modes of Maya. So even though they originate from me, the great sages and demigods are incapable of understanding me, who am beyond the modes. So what is being explained here is that these different qualities of the living entities are ultimately coming from Krishna, but they're not necessarily the means for knowing Krishna. In the two verses previously, Krishna says, Name vidu surya gana prabhavam namaharshaya. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences, for in every respect I am the source of the demigods and the sages. So he's saying even the demigods who are in the mode of goodness and who manifest all of these qualities, simply by having these qualities in of themselves is not sufficient to know me. Because Krishna is transcendental, it means that he is beyond modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And most of these qualities which are described here are qualities which are described in the mode of goodness. They're good qualities. They're helpful qualities. They're qualities that a person who is not on the transcendental platform should try to cultivate from within himself, such as to be situated in knowledge, to utilize one's intelligence, to be freed from doubt and delusion. But simply having these qualities in of themselves is another point that I also wanted to explain, and this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains also in his commentary, another commentary from Jivadharma. He says, people who accept some moral principles have a sense of duty. For them, the great Vaishnava Manu has written, Dhriti kshama damo steyam saucham indiya nigraha dhir vidya satyam akrodho dasakam dharma lakshanam. He says that in the Manu Samhita there are 10 characteristics of religious life. Dhriti means determination with patience. Kshama, forgiveness, which means not retaliating when wronged by others. Dhamma, control of the mind, which means equanimity, even in the face of unsettling circumstances. Some of the same lists, some of the same qualities as described in this verse are described in this list also. Asteya, abstinence from theft. Saucham, cleanliness. Indriya nigraha means restraining the senses from the sense objects. Di means intelligence, which means knowledge of the Shastra. Vidya, wisdom, which means realization of the soul. Satya, truthfulness. Akrodha, absence of anger. He says six of these characteristics, determination, control of the mind, cleanliness, restraints of the senses, knowledge of the Shastra, and wisdom are duties to one's own self. The remaining four, forgiveness, abstinence from stealing, truthfulness, and absence of anger, are duties to others. These 10 religious duties have been prescribed for people in general, but none of them clearly indicate Haribhajan. None of them clearly indicate that they are all manifestations of Shuddha Bhakti, or pure devotional service. In other words, they are moral activities that are beneficial for the cultivation of transcendental knowledge and transcendental realization and cultivation of developing the proper attitude of devotional service to Krishna. But they, and of themselves, they're not sufficient, even if one has all of them, they're not sufficient to be situated in Shuddha Bhakti. Because as we know, in Shuddha Bhakti, the only qualification to be situated in Shuddha Bhakti is to actually have an unalloyed desire to please the Lord. And therefore, Prabhupada makes this point, the point was brought up by Burajan Prabhu also, that for a devotee, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat chikanchana savai gunaistatra samasate sura, for a devotee of the Lord who is engaged in pure devotional service, automatically all good qualities of the demigods will become manifest in him. He doesn't have to independently cultivate these qualities for the attainment of knowledge. They all fully manifest within him by the grace of the Lord and by the grace of the pure devotee of the Lord. These natural qualities of the soul will become fully manifest. Of course, this is the ideal. Of course, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavachikachina savai gunaistatra samasate sura. And he says, on the other hand, non-devotees, even if they manifest such qualities, if they have no devotion to the, Lord, they're driven by their own mental speculation. And therefore, because they're driven by their own mental speculation, the words that are given, manoratena, which actually means the chariot of the mind, they're driven by their own mental speculations, they cannot really have any true good qualities. So, of course, this is the transcendental understanding of the manifestation of these qualities which are obtained by devotion to the Lord. And therefore, that point is made that even if one has these qualities, it doesn't necessarily mean that one is a devotee. Someone could be a yogi, he knows very well how to restrain the senses. Somebody may practice many other principles of yama, niyama, from the Ashtanga yoga system, They may abstain from sensual activities. They may abstain from theft. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're devotees. And this is the point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to explain here, right here. He says that, so these six characteristics, he says that these 10 religious duties have been prescribed for people in general, but none of them clearly indicate Hari Bhajan. Furthermore, one will not necessarily attain complete success in life simply by carrying out these duties faithfully. And then he goes on to explain in that section of Jiva Dharma that in order to attain these and to be successful in these, then one actually has to have Shraddha. Shraddha, which means firm, complete faith in bhakti and faith in worship of the Supreme Lord and faith in worship of the devotee of the Lord. Both these qualities are additional qualities that have to be manifest. And Prabhupada also makes this point elsewhere also. Worship of the devotee of the Lord and worship of the Lord are required. So, therefore, the point is simply being made that these qualities, as described here, be they good or bad, they're all coming from Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur makes one other point, and then I'll go to the Srila Prabhupada's commentary. He says that even those who are knowledgeable of scriptures cannot know about me by their intelligence, because intelligence and other elements are generated from material gunas like sattva, and they all originate from me. In themselves, they are not suitable for understanding me, who am beyond the gunas. And he gives the example, just as sons cannot know the origin of the father. The list of items in this verse is given to show this. And then he describes the list of items in this verse. Again, to know Krishna. Krishna elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly states, if you want to know me, he doesn't say, you have to be intelligent, you have to be situated in knowledge, you have to be free from illusion. So what does he say in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? If you want to know me as I am, bhaktya mana vijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata. You have to have unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service to me. When you have unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service to me, then you can enter into the mysteries of understanding me. And he says, not by study of the Vedas, not by sacrifices, none of these things, austerities, cannot be understood. No, only if you want to enter into the mysteries of understanding me, undivided devotional service. So undivided devotional service means Shraddha, firm faith in worship of the Lord and pleasing the Lord, and the process of pure devotional service, which is the only means to capture the attention of the Lord, and worshipping the devotee of the Lord. Just like we oftentimes quote the verse from Prahlad Maharaj. When Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to his classmates, he says to his friends, "Oh my friends, O sons of demons, you can't please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if you become an expert Brahmin, even if you become advanced in knowledge, even if you perform sacrifices, great sacrifices, austerities, nor by simply accepting vows, nor by performing sacrifices." He says, none of these things will awaken the pleasure of the Lord. The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotional service to Him. And without sincere devotional service, everything else you do is simply a show. This is Prahlad speaking to his friends. What does he mean? Simply a show. He means what does the Lord look at? What captures the attention of the Lord? It's not the qualities of sattva guna, it's bhakti, it's love, it's devotion. The Lord is captured by those who love Him. He's captivated by those who love. He reciprocates with those who love Him. And therefore, if one actually has love for the Lord, and many times, Srila Prabhupada throughout Bhagavad Gita explains, if one serves those who have love for the Lord, then one can get the attention of the Lord. That is how to get the attention. He's very much interested in seeing those who have love. So Prahlad Maharaj says, it's not by austerities, nor by sacrifices, nor by accepting vows, nor by simply knowledge in of itself. None of these things awaken the Lord's pleasure. The Lord's pleasure is awakened
When you love him. When you have unflinching, unalloyed desire to do something to please him. And if without that, anything you do is simply a show, what is he actually saying? It means it's getting, might be getting somebody else's attention, but it's not getting the Lord's attention. It's a show. The Lord's attention only goes to those who love him. So we may be thinking, I'm doing this, I'm pleasing. Sometimes, you know, people, we become captivated, like we want to do something in order to get others' attention. Right? And we get others' attention, we get recognition. If we get recognition, then we may get, you know, we may get profit. We may get some other benefit from profit, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur also in his Harinam Chintamani explains, sometimes neophyte devotees who don't have faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they don't have faith in the holy name of the Lord, they become very eager to be initiated because they want a spiritual name. And he says, because they want a spiritual name, because they want to be recognized for the spiritual name, and they want to get respect by being initiated, and because they want to get respect, they want to think, yes, if I get initiated, other people will serve me and respect me, and then I'll be able to extract some service. These are his words, exact words. I'll be able to extract some service from them. He says, such persons are faithless, and they should not be given the holy name of the Lord, because they have no faith in the holy name of the Lord. He describes it, and he gives the example that initiating such faithless persons who don't have flinching faith in the holy name, but unflinching faith in the holy name of the Lord, he says, like throwing pearls before a swine, or by giving fancy clothes to a monkey. You pour pearls before a swine, they'll simply step on them. You give fancy clothes to a monkey, they won't know what to do with it. They're not going to stand out. They're going to rip them off. They have no respect for the fancy clothes. In the same way, to give the holy name of the Lord to a faithless person is just like that. So he gives that. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, you want the Lord's attention. It's not by these external activities, like severe austerities, nor by accepting vows, nor by chastity, nor by great sacrifices. If it's done for the pleasure of the Lord, yes. But if the Lord is not done for the pleasure of the Lord, then he's not interested. He won't look. His attention only goes to those who love him. His attention, he's there. For those who don't have complete love, then he's sitting within the heart of super soul. But the only thing he's doing as super soul is he's witnessing, seeing, oh, just see what he wants. Okay, I'll facilitate. That's all he wants. He's witnessing and he's giving sanction. Upadrashtra and Anumanta. That's what super soul in the heart does. As Upadrashtra, I have a whole pack. Thank you. As Upadrashtra and Anumanta, he witnesses the desires. He knows what's going on in the heart. He knows what this person wants. Profit, does the perfect want fame? Does he want reputation? Does he want? He knows that these are underlying motivations. So therefore he says, okay, this is what he wants, and I'll facilitate him, I'll give him, because nothing can happen without the will of the Lord, so therefore he grants the permission to perform such activities. But if one actually wants the attention of the Lord has a lot more to give than to simply say, okay, you can have it. Like Prabhupada gives the example also, like the super soul is like the parent who relents to the persistent child who says, I want it, I want it, I want it. And the child makes such a disturbance. You know, even like in the supermarket, you go in the supermarket, put the child in the car, the child starts screaming, I want it, I want it. So finally, the parent says, okay, here, take it, to keep the child quiet. So he says, super soul is just like that with the living entities. They become so persistent in their desires, and the super soul says, okay, you can have it, but you don't have me. You can have what you want, but you don't have me. If you want me, you have to have something else. There must be some other pure desire that's there, that dominates. One may still be filled with many desires, but the pure desire that dominates is that, yes, I realize that I'm fallen. I realize I have attachments in my heart. I realize that I have so many other desires. But I really want bhakti, and therefore every opportunity to develop faith in pure bhakti, I want to go for that. I want to go for that. I may not have bhakti, but any opportunity to get pure bhakti, I'll go for that.
That captures my attention. I'm ready to sacrifice everything else because whatever opportunity I can get for pure bhakti will help me to get rid of all of these obstacles in my path of devotional service. This is faith in Shuddha Bhakti. This is faith. That's the requirement for devotion. That's the requirement to get the Lord. One has to have faith in the Lord. So therefore, just to have these qualities in of themselves does not necessarily give the criteria of a devotee. They're helpful. They're helpful, and we should try to practice these qualities. They're qualities in the mode of goodness. We should know what they are. And therefore, Prabhupada is going to go on in his purport. He's going to explain these things from this perspective, giving us the favorable perspective of these qualities and the acquisition of these qualities. One way is to acquire the qualities, is to try to develop them in ourselves if we're not on the platform of pure devotional service. And the other way is by engaging in pure devotional service, and then we see how these qualities automatically are manifesting within ourselves by the grace of the Lord. So one is by our own efforts, which gradually brings us, hopefully, into the association of devotees and gives us the opportunity for devotional service. The other is by the grace of the Lord. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavachi kinshina savai gunai stacha samasa tresura. All the good qualities will manifest, and therefore one can begin to perceive these qualities manifesting within himself by dint of his faith, and Shraddha, his faith in pure bhakti. Now, of course, the more one advances in the path of pure bhakti, the interesting point that we should take note of is that the more one advances in the path of pure bhakti is that more one begins to realize, I don't have these qualities. And he feels himself unworthy, even for the attention of the Lord. He feels himself unworthy even to be in the association of devotees of the Lord. But he knows he's fully dependent upon it, although I'm unworthy of it. In fact, the more he advances, the more he sees and feels himself to be unqualified. He feels he doesn't have love for the Lord. This kind of quality in a pure devotee actually is what really the Lord is really attracted to. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, when you see Lord Chaitanya wanting to reciprocate with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they put a straw between the teeth and they say, we are lower than worms and stool. We're not qualified for your mercy. But we see Lord Chaitanya bend over, reach down and lift them up and pick them up, saying, your humility is breaking my heart. This is what attracts him. This is what gets the attention of the Lord. It's genuine humility. When Haridas Thakur feels himself unfit to even come close to the Lord, he stays off in some distant place and he bows down, offering obeisances to the Lord. The Lord looks off into the distance and says, oh, who is that over there? And the devotee says, oh, that's Haridas. Why is he over there? He thinks himself to be unfit to be in your presence. And Lord Chaitanya sees Haridas Thakur's qualities off at a distance, feeling himself unfit to be in the Lord's presence. He goes over there. And what does he do? He lifts him up and says, oh, Haridas, you are the greatest devotee. And he embraces him. He lifts him up. Although Haridas Thakur felt himself to be unfit to enter into the temple of Lord Jagannath, he would stay up at some distant place and he would simply look at the chakra at a distance. And he would not even approach the temple. But Lord Jagannath himself, Lord Chaitanya, every day would go and visit Haridas Thakur. These are qualities of pure devotees. We cannot imitate them, but we should recognize them, and we should hear about these qualities of pure devotees, and we should try to cultivate them, develop them. Because these types of qualities is what actually captures the attention of the Lord. So instead of saying, oh, look at me, look at me, look at what I'm doing, the devotee is thinking, oh, I'm not qualified. I just simply want to please the Lord. And the Lord himself, he takes personal attention and goes out and recognizes that devotee. There's a difference. So Prahlad says to his friends, the Lord is pleased when one has unflinching unalloyed devotion to him without sincere devotional service. Everything else is simply a show. So he's saying that if you don't have sincere devotional service or the desire for devotional service, then you might get somebody else's attention. But if you want to get the Lord's attention, there must be devotion, unflinching, unalloyed devotion, or at least you must have a sincere desire to please the devotee of the Lord. Another point I wanted to make in this connection, although I didn't get to the list of yet, we'll get to the list. We'll begin. We're not going to read the whole list. It's a long list. But another point that we oftentimes quote the verse about having faith in pure devotional service. It means that for those who may understand that I don't have pure devotional service, but I have faith that it's possible to achieve it, to obtain it by associating with those who have faith and by hearing the glories of pure devotional service, then we oftentimes quote the verse from the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which states that pure devotional service is so transcendentally potent that simply by hearing about pure devotional service, simply by glorifying it in response, simply by meditating on it, simply by respectfully and faithfully accepting that it exists, and simply by praising the service of others, even a person who hates all the demigods and all living entities in the universe can immediately become purified. Which also is evidence of the value of hearing the glories of pure devotional service and cultivating faith in obtaining pure devotional service, which is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is speaking about, which what Srila Prabhupada is speaking about at the end of his purport, of this purport. But meanwhile, in between, he takes each of these qualities and he explains it in a certain way for those who are still not on the transcendental platform, but those who still need to cultivate these qualities and to see them in proper perspective. So then he goes on to explain, and I'll read the beginning of the purport. Intelligence refers to the power to analyze things in their proper perspective. And knowledge refers to understand what is spirit and what is matter. Ordinary knowledge obtained by a university education pertains only to matter, and it is not accepted here as knowledge. Knowledge means knowing the distinction between spirit and matter. In modern education, there is no knowledge about spirit. They are simply taking care of the material elements and bodily needs. Therefore, academic knowledge is not complete. Asamoha, freedom from doubt and delusion, can be achieved when one is not hesitant and when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Slowly but surely, he becomes free from bewilderment. Nothing should be accepted blindly. Everything should be accepted with care and with caution. And here he's telling us how to approach the transcendental platform. Asamoha means freedom from doubt and delusion. But he says if you wanted to get to the platform of freedom from doubt and delusion, it is said that one has to slowly but surely become free from bewilderment by not hesitating to understand. One is not hesitant when he understands the transcendental philosophy. Then, of course, he says nothing should be accepted blindly. That, of course, is Prabhupada is encouraging us to approach the transcendental knowledge with the proper attitude, such as Arjuna approached Krishna by approaching by submissive inquiry. Tadvidi paripati na pariprasne na sevya upadeti yansi te yanam dhyanina tattva darshana. Should not be approached. It should not be accepted blindly, but one should try to have his doubts cleared by asking questions. Then he goes on to explain, Shamat, tolerance and forgiveness should be practiced. One should be tolerant and excuse the minor offenses of others. This is how he describes tolerance. Matraspashtastu kontiyasi sitoshna sukadukada. Krishna explains in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita the non-permanent happiness, appearance of happiness is distress and their disappearance in due course, like the appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception and one has to learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. But he uses the example here of tolerance means that one should tolerate and excuse the minor offenses of others. Sometimes we see, unfortunately, devotees are not so tolerant. Instead of excusing the minor offenses of others, sometimes I don't have to tell you. Sometimes we see it and witness sometimes. And then rather than excusing minor offenses of others, we blow them out of proportion. And we start to think out of pride, oh, how could he do something like that to me? I remember one time we were in a kirtan, and one devotee, In his enthusiasm, he raised out his hand and he hit the other devotee in the face. But he didn't know the other devotee was there. He was in his enthusiasm. He was just raising his hand. Hit the other. The other devotee got so disturbed. It was a minor offense. This is an example. Tolerance means to excuse the minor offenses of others and not to dwell on them and to think, oh, you've offended me. Didn't you see, you fool? You should look first when you put your hands up before putting them up and glorifying the Lord. So this is what he says is tolerance. Excuse the minor. Satyam, truthfulness means that facts should be presented as they are for the benefit of others. Facts should not be misrepresented. According to social conventions, here, social conventions, it is said that one can speak the truth only when it is palatable to others. But that is not truthfulness. Truth should be spoken in a straightforward way so that others will understand actually what the facts are. If a man is a thief, and if people are warned that he is a thief, that is truth. Although sometimes the truth is unpalatable, one should not refrain from speaking it. Truthfulness demands that the facts be presented as they are for the benefit of others. That is the definition of truth. Sometimes devotees will take advantage of this and say, Prabhu, the truth of the matter is, I don't like you. And you should change. That's the truth, you know. They'll take it to the extreme, right? I'm speaking the truth. It's like one time one god brother of mine came over to me, Mayapur, and he was shocked. He said, one devotee came up to him and said, I always wanted to tell you this. I'm just speaking the truth. I hate your guts. This is not what Srila Prabhupada is giving license to in this verse. In fact, Prabhupada I have it here. Prabhupada says in one quote in a letter, he says, devotees always humbly offer respect to everyone, but when there is a discussion on a point of Shastra, they do not observe the usual etiquette, Satyam Bruyat Priyam Bruyat, which means to speak the truth if it's palatable. They speak only the Satyam truth, although it may not necessarily be Priyam, pleasing. So he's emphasizing that on the topics of Shastra, when Shastra is there, we have to defend Shastra. So, not speaking, this is the best way to present the truth, is by speaking from Shastra and defending the Shastra. I remember I read that one letter once Srila Prabhupada had written to somebody. The devotee was asking him a question, I think, about how to deal with a yoga group that were coming. And Prabhupada says, Prabhupada says something like, these people are bogus, but you can't tell them that. He said, if you tell them that, he says they'll simply become angry and they won't be able to hear. So he said, don't tell them they're bogus, although they're bogus. But he outlined a few details about what is actual yoga and how to actually be engaged in a proper yoga system. He said, these are principles of yoga that you should try to explain to them. He said, but don't tell them the truth that they're bogus. So, again, the same principle is there. And even sometimes devotees always bring up this point about Prabhupada. When devotees would ask Prabhupada about certain bogus yogis, they would ask Prabhupada, what do you think about so-and-so? And Prabhupada, instead of speaking outwardly and publicly about them, he would say, oh, what is their philosophy? And then the devotee would explain their philosophy. And instead of criticizing them, Prabhupada would just pick their philosophy to pieces on the basis of Shastra. But he wasn't criticizing them. Although he could easily say, oh, he's a bogus yogi. But he didn't. So this is the meaning of speaking the truth so according to social convention. But that we speak it in a way that doesn't harm others or push others away. But when defending Shastra, we have to speak the truth. So this is some of the points that Prabhupada is speaking about. I can't cover all. I only began the first paragraph or the second paragraph of this purport is several pages, 4 or 5 pages. And I've already been talking long enough, and it's after 5 o'clock. But does anybody have any questions or comments about the things we have discussed this evening? From local devotees, first. Local devotees, first.
Thank you so much for the wonderful lecture. I just want to ask one question about the forgiveness when it says we should forgive the minor offenses.
Tolerate, he says.
Tolerate the minor offenses. Why just minor offenses? Like there could be the bigger offenses somebody can commit. There could be major offenses, so in that case, first of all, what is the difference between a minor and where should we draw the line between a minor and major offense? And what if we consider something to be a major offense? How should we behave?
Well, we have to look at this from two different angles, important and different. Offense towards ourselves and offense towards others. Towards ourselves, the devotee should always be willing to tolerate even major offenses because he's dependent on the Lord. And we oftentimes give the example, you know, of Dharma the bull when he was beaten by the personality of Kali, and Parikshit Maharaj came and asked him, who's broken your legs? And Dharma said that if I identify the person who's inflicted this pain upon me, then I'm just as guilty as the person who's inflicted the pain on me, because nothing happens without the will of the Lord. Therefore, he refused to identify the personality of Kali. But Parikshit Maharaj, who was the protector of religious principles, could immediately understand, you are religious principles personified, and he understood, my duty is to protect you. So the devotee, and therefore he sought out Kali to punish him. So the devotee, any offenses committed himself, he's willing to tolerate those offenses because he depends on the Lord. But when he sees offenses committed to other devotees, then major offenses. Major offenses, you know, when it means with the intent to cause pain, with the intent to cause harm, with the intent to cause distress. You know, that's offense. That's a major offense. And therefore, when such offenses are committed with that intent, and of course it may not be so clear what is somebody else's intention as well. One has to be careful in drawing his assumptions that this person did it with the intention to cause harm. But there are also different criteria of what are offenses to the devotees of the Lord. Right? So, to physically cause harm to a devotee of the Lord, that's an offense. To blaspheme a devotee of the Lord, it's an offense. It's one of the offenses to the holy name of the Lord. It's not just simply about pure devotees that one should avoid blasphemy. In fact, if one studies the criteria of criticizing of the devotees of the Lord, Lord Chaitanya has even declared in Chaitanya Bhagavat that one who does not blaspheme or criticize any living entity and who constantly chants the holy name of the Lord, I will certainly deliver him. So, a devotee is somebody who is ready to give all respect to others and never to accept any respect to himself. But if there is some offense that is serious enough upon another devotee, then we can take action, another devotee. But towards ourselves, I mean, I've given a whole lectures on this topic. I'm not going to go into a whole other lecture on that. I can give so many examples from Shastra about devotees who tolerated even the greatest atrocities towards themselves and who gained the protection of the Lord, you know, like Maharaj Ambarish, when Durvasa Muni offended him. Maharaj Ambarish completely tolerated the fact that you know, Durvasa Muni invoked a demon to kill him. He didn't even ask the Lord to protect him. But because he was so much absorbed in the Lord protected him. But he didn't think, oh, you have offended me. And even when Durvasa Muni came back and approached him, Maharaj Ambarish continued to fasted for weeks until Durvasa Muni came back, because he felt that he committed an offense by breaking the fast by drinking a little water. In other words, he didn't think that I was offended. And there's so many examples in the Shastra of devotees who were mistreated but didn't accept that mistreatment towards themselves. Instead, they depended on the Lord. So that's how a devotee thinks towards offenses committed towards himself. He tolerates. That's the word that's being used here, tolerates the mind offense. But towards others, sometimes he may have to speak up. But there's even a certain criteria about that also, that we have to be careful when we speak about others. And in fact, since we're on the topic, I'll just read it, because I think we have all devotees here. Non-devotee may not be able to understand so easily, but devotee should be able to understand. This is Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He speaks about this point in Amritavani. I'm sorry, I can't find it. Anyways, basically what he says, a devotee, before he looks at others who are causing pain to another devotee, he should first look within his own heart to see if actually he's properly identifying what he's seeing. He should look with his own heart to see if he has a propensity to find fault with others, if he has a propensity to criticize others. And if he has these propensities with his, if he is still attached to his own material satisfaction, if he's in so many ways he has all of these qualities, then before pointing out these bad qualities in others, he should become angry at himself and chastise himself. Essentially, that's what he says. He says, because he may not be able to perceive the other faults that are being, they may not see them in the proper perspective, because he still has that tendency to find fault with somebody else, even though they may not have intended to cause fault to somebody else. So he says he should look within his own heart first. And basically he used the example that before pointing out the faults of others, one should look within his own heart to see if, make sure it does, the same faults don't exist in himself. He even used something, you know, like this, that saying that people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. something comparable to that. He used it as an example. That before you point it out and become angry at others, make sure you're clean first. And, so he gives a little warning for us that before you start going out, make sure you've seen things in the proper perspective. But actually, it is a duty of a devotee, and it is one of the principles of bhakti to become angry at those who are blasphemous or who have caused pain to others. So that's how to deal with major offenses towards other devotees. You become angry at them. And you may correct them. That was a long answer, sorry. I thought I should cover it. I'm going to end here. Unless there's any other questions from local devotees. Yes? No. Don't put her on the spot. Okay.
Oh, I still cannot understand about making efforts to develop some qualities, because by devotional service, all qualities will be manifested anyway.
Wait a minute. Before you continue, can I answer that? That's not what I said. We make efforts for those who are don't have firm faith in pure devotional service. For those who don't have firm, and at the same time they don't have firm faith, they see within themselves still the manifestations of these qualities, and they should still try to develop these qualities. Although pure devotional service will manifest in due course of time within their hearts. So we should know what they are. We should know what they are. Does that answer your question? But it's not we say, I have faith in pure devotional service. Forget it, I'm going to behave like a rascal all the time because I have faith in pure devotional service and it's justified. I don't have to pursue knowledge. I don't have to be tolerant. I have faith in pure bhakti. No, we should know what these qualities are, because I may have faith in it, but I'm still not there, and I need to practice at least at the same time while I'm still cultivating faith in pure devotional service. So I should know what they are. If I don't know what they are, that's an offense. It's called tattva vibhrama. Tattva vibhrama means to be ignorant of the obstacles of the path of devotional service. It's an offense to the holy name of the Lord. I should know what they are. Do you want to say something? Fiari?
Well, I could think of if you know what these qualities are and you have to try to cultivate them, and the more you advance, the more you see you don't have these qualities.
How are you ever going to stop it?
I guess go from there.
No, but we're talking about different stages of devotional service. The more you advance, you see you don't have these qualities. This is a very advanced stage of bhakti. And we should not try to imitate somebody who's on that platform. Let's take it for granted. At the lower stages of bhakti, we should try to cultivate these qualities. And as we become situated in the more advanced stages, we won't become bewildered and have to ask such questions. They'll automatically be manifest. The humility, the feelings of unworthiness and all that, they'll be manifest automatically by the softness of one's heart.
My Guru Maharaj used to say, when you want to practice criticizing someone, you should first look in the mirror. By the time you finish criticizing yourself, you'd be amazed how little you have to criticize somebody else. Because the problem is, most of the faults are you looking at them in the mirror.
Yeah. The problem is, the reason why we dwell on them so much is because they're still there in ourselves, and the best way to avoid looking at ourselves is to dwell on them on others. It makes it real easy. It makes it real easy to avoid introspection and our own bad faults. Is that if I could spend all my time dwelling on others, I think I'm just too preoccupied with others' faults. I don't have any time to think about it. And then sometimes people think, why is I always thinking this way about others? It must be because they're so bad. Anyways. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.